Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Russ White sitting in for Jack Ebling and in the good hands of Scott Eckersley here at 1320 WILS. Ebling and You is the program. We're live and local. We're More Compelling Talk Radio. We're all those great things Gary Reed was talking about. Local, local, local. And it's a pleasure to welcome a man I get to work with on another radio program. It's called Greening of the Great Lakes. You can check out everything we do, greeningofthegreatlakes.com. And Kirk does some blogging at mlive.com/environment, too. But we've both become just a little bit dangerous on green topics working on this show. But, Kirk, welcome to WILS.
Thanks a lot, Russ. It's a pleasure to be on the other side of the microphone for a change.
Let's talk about the green topic that's really in the news right now. The Chevy Volt was rolled off the lines yesterday. Our buddy Paul W. was down there for that. And I know you've had your name on the list for the Volt when they finally get around to this area. But what is the significance of this? And do you think this is the beginning of a kind of a change in how we drive?
You know, Russ, we've learned together on Greening of the Great Lakes. At first, I was pretty skeptical of electric-powered cars. I mean, there were a lot of mythologies out there. But the more you learn about some of these new technologies, the more exciting they become. I think the electric vehicle technology is one that's in its embryonic stages. But looking forward and given the technology that's in the Volt now and looking forward to better battery technology, for example, I mean, I do think electric cars are here to stay. With the Volt, it's kind of interesting. I mean, there's some misconceptions out there. Yes, the Volt gets 40 miles on the first charge. The battery is charged, you get 40 miles. If you need more than that, though, the gas kicks in, and the gas actually doesn't power the vehicle directly. The gas powers a generator that creates more electricity. That's why you get 99 miles to the gallon. So, in essence, with the Volt, you're always on electricity. All the gas does is, as a backup, charges the generator that propels the car on electrical energy. A lot of people think the electricity goes 40 miles and then the gas kicks in. Not exactly right. I mean, 99 miles per gallon when it's under that gas regime is pretty amazing.
And I guess there's more and more charging stations coming along. And
well, as you know, that's a big issue. Yeah. I mean, the grid is huge.
Yeah.
Where are people going to plug in? I mean, it's fine to plug into your garage, but wonder if you've gone to a football game. You've gone to see the Spartans beat Purdue in the last seconds of the fourth quarter or something. Is there going to be a plug-in available outside the football field, outside the movie theater, et cetera? That is an issue that General Motors and the other automotive people are addressing with our utility companies, consumers, DTE, across the nation. But if they don't get that grid part of it, that infrastructure fixed, then they got a problem. But they're working on it. And the goal in Michigan is to be the most plug-in ready state in the United States, specifically for the launch of these electric vehicles.
And I know a couple of weeks ago when we had Kristen Zimmerman on, an MSU alumna who is in charge of the Volt project, but also DTE's Tony Early and Consumers David Joes, I got the sense they were salivating because they're going to get to sell more electricity.
Right. I mean, you got to pay for the electricity.
Yeah.
But electricity is a lot cheaper than gasoline. And you talked about some of the implications of electric technologies, battery technologies, or any alternative energy. I mean, one of the big things that most people agree on is that we've got to get off this dependency on foreign oil. We've got to get out from underneath the thumb of these petro dictators. What better way to do that? Is oil, natural gas, are those technologies going to be part of the portfolio of fuels in the future? I don't think there's any question about that. But wind and nuclear and other technologies are going to be part of that portfolio as well. The key is we don't have to buy any more oil from those petro dictators. We can produce our oil at home, produce our natural gas at home, and produce those other technologies right here in the United States.
I know some people have wondered, what about, are we really using less energy if everybody's got to plug the car in at night? Is it just different energy, or do we need to get to the point where as long as it's renewable, it's okay if we're using more?
Well, that's an excellent question. We had Christine Todd Whitman on the show recently, and she made an excellent point that I personally had never thought about. you know, we're not going to be using less electricity around the world. I mean, think of these iPhones. I mean, think of the technologies that are, and they're proliferating all over the world. So even though in your house and my house, we may cut down on energy use, we can do some things in our homes and our offices. But the fact is, there's going to be more electricity being used around the world. So the key is, can a major portion of that electricity come from sources other than coal, and oil and the other traditional sources? I think the answer to that question is it's got to. And nuclear, frankly, is a big one.
Kirk Heinze is my guest on Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Kirk hosts the radio program called Greening of the Great Lakes, which is environmentally focused. And Kirk, none other than ITC's Joe Welsh and Linda Blair have talked with you about this too. So much of this is impacted by the grid. Tell
totally.
People what the grid is and how important it is that we beef that up.
Well, essentially, the grid is the infrastructure that delivers the electricity to your home, to your office, et cetera. I mean, it's the transmission towers, for example. It's the cables. It's whatever transmits that electricity from where it's produced in a power-generating plant to the final user. Well, the problem is that grid is antiquated not only in the Great Lakes area but across the United States. And there are portions of the grid in the United States that, for technological reasons, can't communicate with other portions of the grid. So if Buffalo, New York goes down and the whole and they need some electricity from another part of the grid in the United States, if they can't communicate with Michigan or Ohio, guess what? No electricity. I think there needs to be a major federal, combination federal and private sector initiative to rebuild the grid in the United States. I mean, I think that is every bit as important as keeping our highways in top-notch shape. But people haven't thought about the grid because it's been so balkanized. Mm. You know, well, this is North Dakota's problem, or this is consumers' problem, or DTE Energy's problem. No, this is an American issue, and I think it needs to be handled in a across the board, a national sort of a perspective.
Kirk Heinze, you're one of the best friends of Michigan's agriculture industry, sometimes underappreciated industry. Talk a little bit about how important that industry is to this state and also about what you mean when you say it's the original green industry.
Yeah, we like to call agriculture the original green industry. Sometimes farmers, agricultural producers get a bad rap. I mean, and there are some out there that are not good stewards of livestock or crops or the land that they, but 99% of farmers are good stewards. If they're not good stewards, they're not going to have the productivity that they're looking for, whether they're apple growers or soybean producers. If they don't take care of their animals, they're not going to get the prices for their beef cows or for their milk that they would like to get. So farmers have always been stewards of the land, and they've always been innovators as well. So when you look at wind energy, for example, or if you look at methane digesters on dairy farms, or if you look at biofuels and ethanol, farmers are typically willing to try those new technologies, particularly if they're good for the land that they farm or that the animals that they steward.
Kirk, some of the other big news from yesterday is that Governor-elect Snyder has now busted up DNRE again. What's the significance of that, and how do you see that playing out in the next administration?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Russ. Frankly, you know, I can voice my opinion.
Maybe
I'm
we
not
don't know
host.
Yet. Well, I know, yeah. But you know more than most.
The DNRE, the department, I thought bringing the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Environmental Quality together made some sense from a cost savings point of view. I was a little surprised that Governor-elect Snyder decided to decouple those again. Having said that, the people that he selected to run, Keith Cray at the Michigan Department of Agriculture, Dan Wyan at the Department of Environmental Quality, and even Rodney Stokes at the DNR, those are solid people. Those are experienced veterans. They're going to do an excellent job. The rationale for Snyder breaking apart the DNRE again, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why he did that.
Part of the super cabinet, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. Perhaps part of the super cabinet idea. But the three people he selected to run those entities are just first rate. And, you know, I'm sure if it makes sense down the road from an economic standpoint or from a regulatory standpoint, I guess one argument might be made that, okay, if you commingle environmental regulation, perhaps, with Department of Natural Resources, then you've got apples and oranges in the same, that's one argument, in the same entity. Keep the environmental quality regulation and oversight separate from the Department of Natural Resources, which includes a lot of other wildlife regulation, et cetera. Make it clean, make it separate, and programmatically, I'm guessing here, maybe it made sense to Snyder and some of his associates to do that.
And Kirk Heinze, I think if there's one topic more than any other you discuss on Greening of the Great Lakes, it's probably our energy future and mm-hmm. really renewables' role in that. And a question you ask a lot of your guests, I'm going to ask you, mm-hmm. what do you think our energy portfolio is going to look like 5, 10, 20 years from now? And are we really going to get off the oil fix?
Well, I'll tell you the big one, Russ, and this has been sort of a sea change for me. I mean, I was a kid growing up in the 50s, and everybody was talking about having nuclear shelters in case we got hit by the Soviets. And then after that, I mean, that's the atmosphere we grew up in, sort of a fear of nuclear. Then you had Three Mile Island and Chernobyl. You had major disasters in nuclear plants. Americans got scared of nuclear power, and we sort of moved away from it. We didn't sort of. We did move away from it. I now have come almost full circle on that. I do believe that nuclear power is ultimately the cleanest, the most inexpensive, and probably the safest form of energy that we can invest in. The issue, besides the psychological part of it, has always been the downstroke. It's very expensive to build those nuclear facilities, but I think we got to move in that direction. I'm also kind of bullish on solar, as you know. There's some amazing technology, some of those being developed right here in Michigan, up in Midland, with Dow Corning. We have some unbelievable technologies. We have roof shingles now that have a small solar panel embedded in each shingle, so you can't even see the thing. And yet each shingle then becomes a solar panel for your home. I mean, that's the kind of technology we're developing. We may not have all the sun in the world in Michigan, but they've got a lot of it in Arizona and other parts of the United States. Our technology, their sunshine, bright future. And then what about capturing some of that solar power in space? We've got a lot of stuff up in space. This may sound a little wild to the listeners out there, but capturing those sun's rays before they hit the atmosphere, using platforms in space to redirect that energy. There's some people that are already talking about that, including NASA and some of the other government agencies. You never know. I mean, the technologies.
That's true.
It's kind of like the Wild West in terms of new technologies.
Kirk, thanks for joining us on Ebling and You today.
It's been a pleasure, Russ.
Kirk Heinze hosts Greening of the Great Lakes on News Talk 760 WJR every Friday night at 7 o'clock, and the website is greeningofthegreatlakes.com, or read Kirk's blogs at mlive.com/environment. And in a few moments, we're going to get some tips on how you're going to stay fit in the cold weather when you're continuing to work out. Stay with us.